everybody, welcome to this very special podcast. I am interviewing comedians who will be appearing tonight at a very special event at the Fonda Theater. Proceeds benefiting the California Fire Foundation and the Comedy Store's Comedian Assistance Fund. So enjoy.
We have a special guest here now. We're joined by Jeff Scott, who has been the piano player at the Comedy Store for the last 22 years.
That's right. How are you?
Good. We're going to talk a little Comedy Store history.
Yes.
And then I would be remiss if I didn't ask a piano player at a comedy club. How does that work?
It works well. I think we're the only club that has always had live piano players. Now, when I started years ago, there were guys that did singing impressions or wanted musical accompaniment or underscoring, or they like Willie Tyler and Lester. I worked with him, and he would do singing.
And even at the improv, there's a piano on stage oftentimes,
yeah,
most of the time.
Yeah. Well, and,
or all the time, right?
My friend Avery plays over there, but I'm not sure if it's every night. Avery.
No,
plays
there's rarely
the
somebody
store.
Playing. I think it's just there just in case Zach Galifianakis shows up.
Yeah. Although I did play that piano for 3 years before I started at the Comedy Store.
At the improv?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
My friend Penny Wiggins had a female stand-up show that was there for... I think she did it for 7 years, but I played piano for the first three.
Did she do improvisation? I mean impressions?
Yes.
And singing impressions?
And singing impressions.
And she did
then,
like Jeannie, and I remember seeing her back then.
Yeah.
I always wondered what happened to her.
She has been, for the past 15 years, she's been the amazing Jonathan's assistant up in Las Vegas until he took ill. So she just recently was working with...
She was so good.
And she plays the dumb... She plays Psychic Tanya, a dumb blonde. You know, magicians.
You need to bring her impressions back because it's, you know, the sort of the air of the millennials are interested in all that MeTV era.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. So her impressions were all of that sort of 70s, you know.
Well, and she would do a whole thing. She'd do like the story of the Wizard of Oz in 30
yes.
seconds.
So yes.
I would play, you know, all the little music stuff underneath it. And like I said, we had guys like Willie Tyler and Jazz Kaner that, you know, did singing impressions, and Barry Diamond. And so we had a lot more, I guess, what you would call novelty acts back in the day.
Those were real singing impressions. Like
yes.
For real.
Oh, Finest Henderson.
Yeah. Like real singers, too.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Yeah. Not just sounding good, but really good.
True musicians. That happen to have this skill.
Yeah, that look at me and they're like, okay, it's in G.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
I play by ear, so I'll figure that
you
out.
You do? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Always?
I play ragtime.
By ear?
By ear,
Oh, my God, that's
crazy. When my mom started me at piano lessons when I was like 6 or 7, I had about 3 years of piano lessons, and this guy walked me out after my lesson once to my mom, and he said, you're wasting your money. Your son will never play piano. Because in the 60s, you had to play classical. You had to learn the proper fingering and all that stuff. I think now somebody that had a natural ear like myself, they would work with you. But I was told you have to learn this way.
I know.
And there's,
I get it.
They couldn't deal with the
either,
fact that I could just
French
sit and
or
play.
Russian approach, and that was that.
Right.
But my question to you is: did you just sit at the piano and try to work stuff out just for hour on end, or would it just automatically come to you?
It's sort of something that was there. I mean, I worked at it. I found out before my grandmother passed away that her mother played piano in Cape Cod area. She was a single woman that had a baby, so that's why my grandmother never spoke of her mother, you know, being a bastard child.
Right, of course.
But then in her older years, she's like, well, that's why you have that talent. She said, your great-grandmother played piano like that.
And what's your ethnicity?
Scottish.
Huh.
A little bit of Irish, teeny bit of German.
Interesting.
But both sides are mainly Scottish.
Very interesting. Well, anything else you want to sort of share with us about insights into the club or things that people you'd want people to know about or the history of it, that sort of novelty that we have maybe never heard?
Novelty. Well, when it was, I was telling somebody the other day, I was showing them the main room stage used to fold back and showgirls would come out of the floor up on a conveyor or on a platform that would rise. So quite a lot of things. And back then, the showroom was one giant room. We've walled it off to make two different showrooms now.
Right. I remember the big
room.
But
it used to be one big room.
Yeah.
And that was Herman Hoover's Ciro's. And everybody played there.
Interesting.
So, you know, you walk around and you're like, gee, I'm standing where Benny Goodman probably was one
day. It's that far back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The original club was called Club Seville, built in 35.
And was then it there, in, same place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like the front part of the club. And then in 19...
Wasn't that a dance club sort of at that point?
Yeah. Yes. I see. Yeah. Primarily.
Yeah.
And then in 39, Bugsy Siegel and his money partner, Billy Wilkerson, who owned the Hollywood Reporter, bought the building, gave it a $1 million makeover, and opened it New Year's Eve 1939 as Ciro's. And it was celebrities only for the first year or so. And a lot of interesting things
and
went
it was,
there.
And it was a stage at that point?
Yes.
Performing? Yeah.
Yeah, it was still performing. And, I mean, Count Basie played there, Sammy Davis, Bing and Bob Hope and all the old famous
people.
And
when did Mitzi come into it?
Mitzi's husband, Sammy Shore, and his partner Rudy DeLuca rented out the back room, which is called the original room, in 1970.
Oh, is that recent? So,
two, okay. I think it was. And then after they got divorced, Mitzi won the rights to the business as well as the house. So she took it over in 73 and has been
and ruled over it.
The queen of comedy.
And as they say, the rest is history.
It absolutely is.
So thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Great talking with you.
Jeff Scott, everybody. Thank you. We're with Candace Thomas. Who's a regular at the Comedy Store. She is also one of the finalists in Last Stand-Up. Wait. We can last... It says finalist on stand-up.
What? That's not my bio at all.
Finalist on stand-up.
Oh, no.
That's comic what it, standing?
Yeah, no, it's called Stand-Up NBC.
Oh.
So that's what it's called. Yeah, I was a finalist from Stand-Up NBC. That was in 2016, and after that I got the Tonight Show after doing that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. Did you get the couch?
No. I don't know how often they do that anymore.
I don't think they do that anymore.
I don't even think there is a couch anymore. I think it's just right. Fallon stands up.
Because Fallon jumps around quite a bit.
Yeah, he just podcasts now.
Essentially. So your set was good out here.
Yeah, it was good considering the circumstances.
Which is outside.
Outdoors, seven people.
You've got lovely sort of Eastern gear on. Like
thank
you're
you.
Set up for the cold.
I am, but this is vegan leather.
Nice.
And that means it's just plastic, I think, because it's falling apart.
Yeah, or vinyl.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not holding up too well.
Are you vegan?
No.
No. Strangely enough.
I don't eat meat. I'm vegetarian. Well, pescatarian. I eat fish.
Where'd you grow up?
Queens, the first 10 years of my life, and then Cincinnati, Ohio.
It's a shift.
It is. My dad, I've never forgiven him.
What happened?
He moved. His job got transferred. So at 10, I didn't have much of a say. So
was that hard, changing? I mean, massive environmental change.
Even at 10, I knew it was a mistake, right? Like, you don't know much when you're a kid, but at 10, I was like, Dad, this can't be a good look, right? And then I noticed a big difference, like, with, like, racism and stuff like that. Because, you know, in New York, everyone's a mix of everything. In Cincinnati, it's like black or white. And so, I'm in between. Both my parents are mixed with black and Native American and white. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
You win the lottery.
I know, right?
It's good for you. And so when you had to establish yourself in a new school in a Midwestern city, did you start the comedy then to keep the kids at bay?
Well, you know, I think I got funny early on when I was still in New York because I always felt like left out. I looked like my family, but I'm like the lightest one in my family. So I always felt like the one, like the white sheep.
You were the white sheep.
I was the white sheep. Yeah.
How awful.
It is.
Especially these days.
Right, it is.
Oh, my God.
It's the worst thing you can be.
Right, especially when you have all this great pedigree behind you.
Right, I'm
you
like, come on, guys, I'm so diverse. I knew what was going to happen. I was ready for it.
And where do you live now?
I'm here. I'm in L.A.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm in L.A.
Another shift. How's that been for you?
Amazing. Like, I've been out here for years now, and it was kind of a smooth transition. I knew that I wanted to do... I didn't know that I wanted to do stand-up when I moved out here, but I knew I wanted to write for television, and I knew I wanted to act, and then I just kind of fell into stand-up.
Are you doing some writing?
I am writing, yeah. I always write, yeah.
For anything that's on the air now?
Not right now. I've written some pilots that I don't think any of them have gotten picked up at this point, but sold to network, but then not got picked up.
It is a little bit of the... In addition to your pedigree, it's a golden age of female writers in television.
Especially
comedy.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for sure.
I mean, this is the time.
It is the time.
Yeah.
I need to just write that on my resume. I'm a woman, hire me.
My daughter's she's very much of a writer, and I keep saying she wants to write a book, you know, and a fiction and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, come on, Hollywood, write for television.
Write for TV.
It's time. This is good.
How does that translate? Like, I don't know. Like, I know I look at books, and I'm like, I could never do this. Yet I'm writing scripts. She can do both?
No, I don't know. She can do the books.
She could do the books.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I look at that. It seems very daunting.
Daunting and how do you support yourself doing that? It's my question.
How do I support myself doing stand-up? I have no idea.
Well, that's easy. You just be good.
You do, but it's still, even, look, I've been good, all right? And right. I've just been able to support myself.
That's what I'm
just
saying.
Just doing stand-up for the past, like, 2 years.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right?
So it just takes a minute. There's a lot of, like, hustles you have to do until you can, other people believe in you.
And was that about getting, is that like, I'm dying up here, that whole, did you watch that series?
I watched the first season. I didn't watch the second.
Is it like that for you? Or I mean, obviously that was very stylized and time.
I mean, I think some of it was kind of accurate, but you know, they made it for TV.
But what I'm asking is when you're saying you have to go through some shit to establish.
Oh, of course.
What does that mean?
I mean, the open mics, you're doing like... I'm complaining about doing shows and not getting paid. Meanwhile, just earlier this week, I did a show outside and didn't get paid. Goes away.
Wasn't that tonight?
Tonight and the other and okay. Wednesday. I did this twice.
It never stops.
Yeah, but luckily these are both for charity. They were both for charity.
Yeah, yeah.
When coming up and doing open mics where you're performing in front of, like, I've performed in hallways before. I performed in, you know, bars, coffee shops. It just we don't say no to anything. So, you know, it's all part of it.
So what's the future? What do you think? You're sort of crystal ball.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have my own television shows, multiple.
That you'll be writing.
Writing, starring in.
Oh, good for you.
And producing.
Nice.
Yes.
And what kind of what is the premise?
Oh, well, I don't want to tell my idea. I don't want to give my idea.
Multi-ethnic.
No, but I call myself the Black Tina Fey. So, like, it's a, like kind of like I like the style of 30 Rock.
Nice.
Yes.
That sounds very, like, now. Like,
it is very now. And it's like the idea that I have is very, like, the way the sociopolitical climate is going right
Perfect.
Now. With like,
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you have all the background to write something like that, right?
I do.
I can't wait. How exciting.
I do. Thank you.
Yeah, and it could make a difference,
too. Will you make a cameo in it?
Done. I mean, because I think it sounds like it's going to be socially, like,
it
funny,
is.
But worth it.
You it know, really like, is. I mean, I want to tell you more, but I really don't want to. I feel like someone
right,
might
steal
my idea.
We got to turn these mics off. I want to hear more about this. So. All right, and we've got that Facebook's got to go, too. So. All right, we'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about it. Candace Thompson, everybody, look for
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having
give
me.
Give us all your
social media. You can find me on social media at Jokes by Candace, and that's Candice. CandaceThompsonComedy.com for all my shows. And I also have a podcast that you can listen to on all platforms called The Struggle with Candace Thompson.
Awesome. Well done.
Thank Good you, Dr.
See
Chris.
You. Pleasure. Jessica Wellington. Hey, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much. I'm excited.
It's good, right? This
yeah.
is fun. It's good. Did you have fun on the set?
It was so much fun. I didn't know I was going to be going up. And then they were like, hey, you're going to cold open.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Outdoors with people milling around.
Right. And I was like, I'm down. Let's do it. Absolutely. Because I'm just here, you know, I work for the Comedy Store, and I'm a comedian there, and we're selling merch. So I brought you a hat.
Oh, thank you. God damn it. That's awesome. It's fantastic. I'll be wearing this. Fantastic.
Yes.
And so tell me more. Where'd you grow up?
Well, I'm from North Carolina originally and Florida.
You sort of sighed when you said,
oh. I have such a past.
What happened?
This is going to be a session. I was in the Air Force for 6 years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
Ammo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ammo like engineer or ammo like upkeep?
Like we build, test, stores into the flight line and account for all munitions. And
was it over here or did you have to go travel for that?
I was in Vegas and 2 years in England and I did some time in Iraq and Qatar.
Everything cool?
I mean, I'm here.
Yeah. Was it an okay experience?
Yeah. I mean, I actually really had a good time when I went overseas.
Were you already doing comedy at that point or is that?
No. I didn't start until after. I didn't know regular people could do comedy.
How'd that happen to you?
I came to help a friend in Sacramento and then came to a show and realized they had an open mic and classes. And I said, you mean anybody can do this?
There's a skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's fun, right?
It's amazing. I love it.
What do you hook onto in your comedy?
I definitely talk about my background, white trash.
Susan, what another white trash? Oh, two more white trash.
Yeah, they were like, that's what we got to do.
But you were
on.
Southern white trash, though. Southeastern white trash.
Yeah, yeah,
a little
yeah.
different kind of white trash.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is. And then, now it's just fun to be able to own up to it and move past it and just have fun with it. Like, screw it.
My friend Theo Vaughn is...
Theo.
He makes a whole career off of this, right?
He does.
You never sold hamsters out of the back of a truck like he did?
No, but there are things I talk about. Like, I used to breed rats.
Of course.
Yeah.
Nutria or like regular rat?
regular. Yeah, but did you breed rats?
No, we didn't intentionally breed them. You had a rat growing up?
See, look at that. She had a rat.
Mouse or a rat? A rat.
They're really friendly.
Igor. They really know this about my wine. How did you, Jessica? What the fuck? Thank you for bringing that out, by the way.
You're welcome.
Igor.
See? They're sweet. They really are. But a lot of mine were used for snake food, too, so I feel bad.
Okay, well. Your snake was a more important part of your menagerie. Well, when you live in the Southeast, and you get the reptiles.
Actually was in England. I had the snakes.
When you went in England?
Oh.
This is when you were in the Air Force?
3 to 05 or something like that. 02 to 05.
This is Air Force.
Yeah.
And your name is very British.
I know. My full name is Jessica Blair Wellington.
Oh, my God. How did that happen in North Carolina?
My mom saw some soap opera.
Ah, okay. Got it. Check.
Exactly.
And are you people in this country for a long, 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 long time kind of thing? Or is it something?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know.
You don't go from Wellington to white trash without a few generations in between.
Right.
Pretty much.
We've been here a while.
That's good.
Yeah.
So what's up for you? What's the future?
Well, I was actually just in the movie The Mule with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, I want to see that.
I'm really excited. Yeah.
You've seen it?
Yeah. I went right away.
How great. Congratulations.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And I do a podcast called The Liars Club with Felicia Michaels. She's one of the first women to get passed at the Comedy Store. Back in the 80s. She was here, you know. She was on Star Search, she hates when I say this, and Full House. Yeah, I love her to death. And we do a podcast together.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Jessica Wellington, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate it. Oh, can I say the podcast?
Yes.
It's called The Liars Club, and you can follow me at Jess Wellington 2, please.
Jess Wellington 2 and at The Liars Club.
And at The Liars Club 1.
Done and done.
Thank you.
Jesus Trejo, everybody. Actor, comedian. You've been all over the place. Roastmasters Invitational.
Yeah.
And I saw your bit a little bit. Deep in the pot humor, which I dig.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm new to weed, man. I started smoking weed when it became legal because I wanted to do it the right way.
Sure.
You know, didn't want to disappoint my mom too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm new to this and I'm trying to find what it is. I'm sticking with CBD for the time being.
And how do you find it?
It's great. I've never heard my heartbeat and felt it on my rear end before. It's like, whoa, is that real?
I tried CBD too, and it made me sleep and then wake up.
Great.
It was not good.
That's a win?
No, it was like sleep for an hour and then wake up and then wake up and then wake up.
Oh, wow.
So my next move is, honey, try this.
Yeah.
And then she had panic attacks.
Oh, hilarious.
So it's not for everybody.
Yeah, the panic attacks I can go without. That's why I kind of stick with the CBD.
That's what we're talking about, CBD.
Yeah, I just stick
I was surprised that we got that from CBD. How much did you use?
Just a couple little hits, you know, a little like, off the pen.
Like the, you're smoking.
Yeah, smoking it, but also the drops, too, are pretty cool.
The drops are like 20 milligrams, right?
Yeah, they're safe, you know, but I think anything else, you're like, you're on your own, buddy.
No, I know, and we don't have any idea what the consequence of all this stuff is. We have the physicians of the world, we have no fucking idea whether it's good, bad, going to be helpful. We're thinking it's going to be helpful, but nobody really knows.
Yeah, nobody really knows. I think weed right now, it's where cigarettes were back in the day. Physicians were smoking it in the office.
Right, Camel. Like, Camel's
yeah, Camel.
Right. I recommend Camel to my patients. But in fact, Marlboro just bought a whole big weed company.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that. Marlboro invested like, what, $1 billion?
I knew. I said it. I've said it forever that... That the new tobacco is going to be weed,
yeah, and there it is. I mean, it's interesting to see what direction it goes, you know. But
where are you from?
Long Beach, born and raised.
Oh, the LBC.
Yeah, LBC, born and raised.
And you managed not to smoke pot.
Yeah,
weird, huh?
Yeah, weird. And now I'm doing it now. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing, man?
Do you know who Fred Stoller is?
No.
Comedian, used to be in it. Everyone loves Raymond all the time.
Oh, yes,
with the kind of funny voice.
Uh-huh.
He got into weed late in life.
Yeah.
He's doing way too much of it, though.
I got into it because of my joints. So joints for joints, I guess. But
is it helping?
It helps to sleep.
Yeah.
Kind of shut off the brain. You know, that's what helps
problem.
With me. Yeah, for sure.
Have you always been doing stand-up or did you do something else in your life?
I've been doing it for 11 years now.
Good for you.
I started at the Comedy Store, parked cars there, mopped the floors.
Good for you.
Sat people. I did everything in that building.
Just to be able to get up on that stage.
Just to get my glorious 3 minutes, which I could barely get through. And now, you know, I have 4 minutes.
So yeah, that was good. Well, I saw you on the stage. You have a presence. I mean, you command it.
That's very sweet.
Good
Thank
for you,
you,
man. How long have you been doing that?
11 years. I'm full time since 2012. I got passed at the store September 7th, 2012.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure of traveling and going around and doing one nighters here and there and featuring for a bunch of them.
What's coming up for you?
I'm going to be at the Brett Improv for New Year's featuring for Bert Kreischer.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Bert's a friend of mine. And have you spent time with Bert?
Yeah. I've been on the road.
With Bert?
Yeah. Oh, quite a
dude,
bit.
Dude, and you survived that? No wonder you're smoking pot now. Oh, my God.
So, yeah. I'm not quite a drinker, so it's like,
What are you going to do with him? You got to do something.
Yeah, the
machine says party. You got to party.
You got to, man.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, listen, congratulations.
And hey, thank
I'll
you so much.
I'll look for you with Bert. You've been on his podcast? Or?
No, not yet. All right. Not yet. Hopefully one day. Pleasure to meet you.
All right, man. Nice to meet you. Jesus. Jesus Trejo. Stephen Allen Green, everybody. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Dr. Drew.
Oh, now is an accent back again.
Yes, of course.
And you've got the Percostoma that, what was the fame?
Terry Thomas
had.
Don't raise the bridge. Lower the river.
I only got to know him as a kid in the mad world.
Which, by the way, has what significance trivially in terms of Hollywood cinemas?
Hold on. It was the first to be shown in the Cinerama Dome.
Boom.
It was the very first film in the Cinerama Dome?
1963.
I saw it in the Cinerama
Dome.
So
did
I. It's crazy.
Yes.
And the big deal was the fire truck scene made you feel like you were moving, and
yes,
they made a big deal out of that.
Because they had three projectors.
Three cameras. I thought How the West Was Won was the first. Mm.
Maybe. Cinerama, it was a premiere. Anyway, you win.
I don't know. But they told me you have benefited from some of the services rendered by the Comedian Assistant Fund.
I have indeed. I'm very humbled, but I'll bounce back from that. Basically, the long and the short of it is you have everything, lost everything.
Mm.
Success in England and,
so you were successful in England, then you came here.
Came back here. I was 10 years at the Comedy Store.
Got it.
From 81 to 91, I was a house MC. I lived at the house. I wrote comedy for people.
That must have been a crazy time, right?
It was insane. It was really insane.
That was Pryor and Robin Williams.
Yeah, I was an MC, brought them all on.
Oh, my God.
And
did you talk to him backstage and stuff?
Yeah, a little bit. I wasn't the one that hung out with Pryor because there was always
he had a pretty bunch of, he's scurrous, as they would say, pretty prickly.
Well, he can be.
Yeah.
I happened to do a game show with Burt Reynolds that day.
Oh.
And I remember there was a picture of Burt and Pryor and Robin on stage at the Comedy Store. So during the commercial break, I said to Burt Reynolds, there's a picture of you with Robin. We were mentioning. He goes, yeah, I remember that. He goes, I said, why don't you come down tonight? Because Pryor's working out. Because back then at the Comedy Store, if you brought a big celebrity, it kind of added to your cachet.
Your cred,
exactly. So he says, I can't but say hi. So Pryor's on stage, cut to him, the Comedy Store, Pryor's on stage. He finishes, he walks out, and I'm sidling along, and I say, hey, I did this game show, and Burt Reynolds says, hi. So hi from Burt Reynolds, and can I be blue on your radio?
Yeah,
show?
Yeah.
And Pryor says, tell Burt Reynolds to suck my dick.
That sounds like Pryor.
Yeah.
Right?
And then he said, tell him to suck my dick twice. And, I felt like, okay, I'll never do that again, whatever that was,
His stuff, I'm preoccupied with him because I feel like his stuff was poetry. I still feel like it stands up.
Well, the way you... Yeah, absolutely right. And in the room, it was truly like watching Ginsberg doing Howl at the Albert Hall every single night.
Every time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like... I remember kind of feeling sorry for anybody with that amount of talent because it's just... You can see them dealing with being treated like a god.
Huh.
And knowing that they're, as fallible as anybody, and probably more so in ways that most people wouldn't understand.
Right, that's what gives them that whatever
yeah.
that is.
Yeah.
And so you went to England, and what did you do over there?
I became semi-famous over there. I immediately hit the ground running. People thought I was brilliant. They came up to me afterwards and say, I saw your show, you were brilliant.
This is comedy.
Comedy.
Yeah.
In the clubs. And then, of course, they'd invite me to tea, and the next day, someone would hold up a tea and go, this tea is brilliant. So it's kind of like, oh, I see.
I like the tea.
Yeah, I like the tea. Everything's brilliant. But I just found it much more, first of all, the age thing. I went over there, I think, in my late 30s or early 40s, and there were comics on the circuit that were in their 70s. There were also, because I had a guitar, and I worked the crowd, and I did everything from jokes to characters and all kinds of stuff from my influences, there were no rules over there. There were double acts, there were tranny acts, there were character acts, there was magic comedy acts, and there were stand-ups. And then being the American, I had the cachet. Yeah. So a lot of the audience and media through the American, they knew nothing about America other than Jerry Springer that played over there and Bill Clinton, not Bill, yeah, Bill Clinton and George Bush the second when he was president. Mm. And I just saw a completely different culture. I even had national health care just because I became a citizen. You ever see a national health care card?
I have.
Yeah. So that was the coolest. When I got my job working at the BBC on the Fred McCauley show on Radio Scotland, they wanted to pay me. And they said, what's your national insurance number? And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Wow. I know. It blew my mind.
Yeah. And why'd you leave?
Well, I lost my home. Mm. And what I mean by that is I didn't get so drunk I couldn't find my way home. I overinvested with it. I lived in Notting Hill, so when that movie came out, every 6 months someone would offer me a lot of money just to, you know, and I wanted to make a movie, which I did. And I produced a big show, three of them, the last one at the London Palladium for a drug and alcohol charity launched by Princess Diana.
Wow.
Yeah, because my act was about being addicted. I tell the audience to get high in your laughter, and so was my last show. Huh. I'd play act with them. And then when I got to England, somehow I connected with Turning Point Scotland and met 15-year-old Glaswegians who had a real drug problem, mm-hmm. and, you know, just by proximity. Mm-hmm. And I also reflected back to how desperate I was in my early days. And a lot of people, that stage was a high, and they were addicted to it.
Yep.
And you know, there have been casualties along the way. I don't know how I survived, but I did. And it was like going through the looking glass. So I saw that where, you know, in ironic ways, there was more freedom of speech for me in England because they will listen. And as long as you get to a point, they won't kill you.
Right.
That's it, really.
That was Alexis de Tocqueville's point when he came over here to examine us in 1835. We claim to have all this freedom, but in fact, we're least free of speech, especially these days.
Well, these days, I don't know what the hell's going on.
So you came back here and then started to struggle, and this fund has been helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because whilst I couldn't, you know, I didn't walk into the Comedy Store 9 years ago and say, I'm Stephen Allen Green, give me spots.
Yeah.
I didn't even know if I wanted spots. You know, I didn't know. I knew it was a new time has moved on.
Yeah. That's got to be weird. Come back to the U.S. and it's like, now I've got another new country.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Because literally, I learned to speak and communicate in British English, which, as you probably know, is very different than American English. I was getting into all kinds of trouble with people. I was in New York getting into a cab, and there was somebody already in the cab. I was opening the door, and I went, oh, sorry, you know, as you do in England. This guy gets out. You know, what are you fucking sorry for? I'd have beat your fucking head in. You know, it's like, wait a minute.
Wow.
It was a lot of miscommunication or little things. Like my girlfriend was picking me up. I was at the therapist in Westwood, and I said, where are you parked? She said, below Wilshire. We don't use that. We don't use below or above. We being English.
Yeah.
So I thought, I just imagined for a moment her car was underground. I was,
underneath
what the hell?
Below Wilshire Boulevard.
So I found the struggle a little bit hard. And I had just produced this thing and lost my home.
Because you invested money in the thing?
Yeah, well, I invested more than I thought I would. There was three elements. I had real estate and a family backing, and then all the money I made in England. And I would come back, and I'd see comics languishing at the bar, mostly at the Improv, where there was a bar, and, you know, that were really good, that had HBO specials. And I said, hey, here's a ticket. Come to Scotland. Come to London, and I'll put you on stage. And I got a few of them on television. And I just saw, like, what it did for me, which was, you know, I was the biggest joke when I left here. I just burn bridges without realizing it or whatever was going on. And over there, suddenly I'm just a working class comic, which is only what I wanted to be, and get to work the crowd and people call you for gigs. And then I worked for the BBC, and I would also represent America sometimes at the, I think it's called the ICA. It's near the Palace. It's International Media About America. I was spokesman for America for a while. Mm. Once did a show. Do you ever hear of the Ealing comedies, you know, with Alec Guinness and Peter Sellers?
Not really.
You know those guys, right?
Those guys, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
So the Ealing comedies, the same director, I think it's Michael Crichton, or it's a Crichton guy who directed A Fish Called Wanda, was the director back then. And so there was a comedy club there called Ha Bloody Ha. And, you know, the MC would be like, all right, come to the stage right now, all the way over from America, please welcome Mr. Stephen Allen Green. You know, and I'd come and, you know, there would be this 150 people in this crammed in this pub theater, because all the theaters, all the pubs had theaters. So there were 200 comedy rooms in London. And so I was on stage and trying to do my act, and I started to get heckled with, you know, what's America ever given the world? And I'd have to hit back a joke. What about Vietnam? Hit back with a joke. But there was always this American. I didn't know I was an American until I got there, is my point, Drew.
How are things now?
Personally?
Yeah.
Better.
Good.
I want to thank the fund. I want to talk about the fund. Let's talk about it, because that's what this is about.
Yes.
Sorry. So basically, I've been making, you know, trying to find my feet again. And the most wonderful day job in the world is driving Uber. I love it. And I write for comics. I'm writing for a comic. Well, I don't want to say, but I'm writing for comics and I'm doing some stand-up. And
right.
But I need the daily money, right?
Yeah.
So that was the Uber. So my credit was shot. Didn't have a status, living off cash. Couldn't get a car. And I was out of a job and out of a car at the same time, which 9 years ago put me in a very dangerous position because I was in a very tall building.
Did the fund help you with this?
The fund absolutely helped me. Okay.
And it was available 9 years ago?
No, it helped me recently.
Oh, recently, okay.
So I'm actually getting the car on Monday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And big deal.
I got a whole story next time, another time, about looking for a car through Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace and the, you know, dealers and everything. But I tried to start something called the Laughter Foundation to help comedians. I wanted this. I'm so happy.
It seems
happy.
Like there's needed to be a grassroots thing. And, it's, of course, the Comedy Club has finally done it. So it's,
grateful. It's ironic I'm benefiting from it.
Yeah.
But I'm so grateful for it because one thing I did say to them was, to Alicia, who's my caseworker, I said, you know, I'll accept this money, but really only if we can have therapists available to comedians, because 9 years ago, a therapist saved my life, and so I contacted my old therapist, and that's part of the deal. We're going to try to make therapists
available.
That's part
of the deal, exactly. And one day, maybe you'll be supporting this fund in some way. You know what I mean?
Well, I have plans on that, too.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much, man.
Steven. Thank you, Dr. Drew.
Appreciate it very much. Hey, the great Brody Stevens in here. How are you, buddy?
Enjoy it. Feeling great.
You're
Dr.
Looking
Drew.
Well, I haven't seen you in years. We haven't been face to face. We've been like circling in the same waters, but not sitting eyeball to eyeball for a while.
Not for a few years, at least.
A few years. You've lost some weight. You look like you're in good shape.
I walk. I take apple cider vinegar, iodine drops. I think thin, work on my posture.
Everything good? Otherwise?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What are you
I'm
working
excited.
On?
Comedy, stand up. I've been going on the road with David Spade. He's on the show
Spade's
here tonight.
Spade's here tonight, yeah.
Yeah. So we've been traveling all over the country this past year.
You and Spade all over the country. It's sort of an image I can't get out of my head.
It's a lot of outback steakhouses, yard house. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, you get to see how he is with the flight attendants and the waiters and all that stuff. And it's like, it's a legit thing.
So he's a gentleman?
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, it's always, I see it firsthand.
Right.
And you always hear good things about David, and then you see it, you go, I can see why.
He always has a group around him, too, because everyone likes to be around him. There's a group of friends that hang.
He's got a crew.
Yeah.
And I think I'm in that crew now.
Oh, now you're part of it.
Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
I'm 1 degree separated from Sandler. I'm trying to get into that.
Good luck.
You know, leapfrog.
Sandler's one that determines that one, I think. Not
yeah.
David. Is it, how did you guys get together?
Just actually doing shows at the Comedy Store, but before that, we were on a Fox fantasy football show. So on Fox Sports, and I worked at Fox Sports for many years doing the audience warm-ups on Best Damn Sports Show and
right.
then the NFL show. And so David was over there, and then George Greenberg, the producer, he called me, and boom, boom, boom. And so I knew Nick Swartzen, who was on the show. So it was just a perfect...
I haven't talked to Nick in a couple years either. Is he okay? Everything good?
Yeah, Nick's... I see him on Twitter. He's always following the Minnesota Vikings around.
Yes.
And he's doing theater shows and all that.
And your life, what's going on? Anything like interesting? Relationships?
Not real.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, 818 till I die. Yes, born at Kaiser, Panorama City.
Panorama City.
Yeah.
Is that where you grew up?
I grew up in Tarzana.
Tarzana.
Yeah, so I spent time in Tarzana, and now I'm in North Hollywood area. But I'm loyal to the Valley because the Valley gets it. It keeps me grounded.
Carolla grew up in the Valley, so I was regaled with North Hollywood stories, you know, all these years working with him.
Yeah, he went to North Hollywood High School. So did my father, and he's got that the Taco Bell that Adam always talks about right
what?
There on Magnolia.
Say that again.
The Taco Bell.
That's his?
Well, no, doesn't he talk about it all
yes,
the time?
Yes, all the time. Oh, sure.
Yeah, so that's an iconic Taco Bell.
Oh, yes, of course.
But I've been doing Del Taco, actually. Del Taco doesn't get enough credit.
It's for good food.
For good food. Yep. They're open 24 hours. Mm-hmm. They have French fries.
Nothing better than their bean burritos.
Nothing better than a bean burrito.
For like 99 cents.
99 cents. They have fish tacos, actually, which are pretty tasty.
I wasn't expecting to talk about Del Taco menu tonight, but thank you.
Okay.
It's bringing it. And in the Valley, did you go to North Hollywood High, too, or you went to?
My father went to North Hollywood. I went to Reseda. My mother went to Fairfax. That's the Jewish triangle.
I was going to say, so you're Jewish.
I was born Jewish, raised Gemini.
So you're Jewish.
Yes.
Jewish.
I feel Jewish.
Jew adjacent.
Yeah. I am.
Right.
I mean, my parents my family, they're involved in it. I just didn't go through the Hebrew school and the Torah and all that stuff. I just kind of strayed a little bit.
Did they expect you to or want you to?
I don't know. I think my mom may have wanted me to, and my father, he was kind of like a lone wolf.
Is your mom still like urging you to marry a nice Jewish girl and this sort of thing? Is she given up on that a long time ago?
She would just want me to be with anybody at this point.
Jewish or not?
Jewish or not.
Male,
preferably female.
Female. She
not,
wants female.
Not male.
She's, but that wouldn't be cool with her.
I mean, she would accept it,
grandkids.
I guess.
She wants grandkids, I guess. Well, still, you can do that these days.
But she's 87, you know.
Oh.
So she's got a dog.
Oh. Your dad's still around?
My father passed in 1997.
So a while ago.
It's been a while.
So he was young.
He was 63 when
cancer?
He passed. Heart issues. Heart.
Have you kept pace on that yourself? You're watching out for that?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I walk. That's why I try to have not get worked up and have anger issues.
You need to do this thing called color.com. It's a website. It's a, for $200, they check your genetics and things that they can really determine things that put you at excessive risk for certain kinds of cancer and heart disease. And it determines the screening procedures you should go through. Like, I have to have colonoscopies every freaking year.
Really? I thought you only get one when you're 50 and you're good.
No. Well, it's every 7 to 10 at 50 for everybody, but I have something called Lynch syndrome, it turned out, which is an Ashkenazi Jew thing.
There you go.
It's a DNA repair mechanism abnormality, and now I got to get colonoscopies every year. And my sons have to start at 25.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you want to do this. I'm telling you, you want to do it.
So this
your dad
is
died at a young age. You want to check that out.
Yeah, 63, yeah. But my mother's 87.
No, I get it. We want to make a screen for that 63-year-old part. Just make sure there's not something you should be screened for more aggressively.
You have a promo code for it?
She does, actually. See, my wife does.
I did Ancestry.com.
This is different. This is for the 30s, really kind of cancer screening and some heart disease things.
Cancer. So, okay, yeah, I'll try it.
I think you should. That's all I'm saying. It's good. Well, Brody, thank you so much. Good luck tonight.
I'm excited.
To
thank you, and we'll see you out here on the show.
You
got it.
Okay. We're joined now by LCSW Naomi Rada. Is that right? Rada?
Rada, yes.
Rada, nice to meet you. From the Motion Picture and Television Fund, responsible for oversight program development for the MPTF's community-based social service programs. How does it, you have to talk right directly into this thing.
Okay.
How does that serve comedians?
Well, in April of this year, the Comedy Store decided that they wanted to provide direct social services to comedians.
Now, I used to work for an organization called the Musicians Assistance Program, uh-huh. MAP, and uh-huh. It's now known as Music Cares, right?
Yes.
And I've always said the musicians community had always done this amazing grassroots, I wouldn't call it an effort. They actually executed this amazing program where we treated thousands of people who had ever made a living with music mm-hmm. with drug addiction. And mm-hmm. There was some else in mental health services, but it was primary. Alicia's coming in too. Have a seat, Alicia. This is, I'm sorry, that's now.
This is Alicia.
That's Alicia. And
yes,
you're Naomi.
I'm Naomi.
That's right. Alicia,
yes.
Say hi. We just started talking about the organization and what's going on for the comedians and who got this idea? And
so
how
this was an idea.
How's it being funded?
Sure. This is an idea that was Peter Shore's, really. I think, you know, after his mom passed away, or he knew that she was becoming more and more frail and really wanted, you know, Mitzi has always been kind of the mama bear of, you know, the comedy world.
If you've seen I'm Dying Up Here, that character sort of loosely based on Mitzi.
From what I'm told, yes. And, you know, the comedians are notoriously, you know, living kind of marginalized, living on the fringes, you know, doing it for art's sake, you know.
Let's be clearer about it, because I have actually published literature on this. Uh-huh. I've studied. I get access to everybody, so I actually published some literature. Higher incidence of mental illness, straight up. It's higher narcissism, higher trauma, higher substance abuse.
And substance issues.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Way higher than the average population.
Yes.
Not way higher, but higher than the average population.
Yes.
So I was always wondering why there wasn't more of a grassroots effort to help them. So this is great.
This is it, yes. Yeah. So, Peter and some of the other leadership at the Comedy Store approached us. And
how long ago?
About April of this year.
Well, I was going to say, it must be relatively recent.
Yes,
Alicia,
relatively
you're involved recent. With Naomi in what sense?
So I'm the designated social worker for the Comedy Store Fund. And
you're
Naomi,
an LCSW also? Or
I'm an MSW. Okay. So I'm supervised by Naomi. Mm-hmm.
Which is great.
Yes. So Alicia's in the trenches.
So you're the caseworker, essentially.
Yes, essentially.
How many cases do you carry?
It's been kind of slow to start. I think we've got about 10 active cases right now.
How does somebody make a referral?
So we have a hotline. I can give out the number.
Do you have to have made a living as a comedian? Is that the requisite?
The eligibility requirement is that you have to have been a paid regular at the Comedy Store for at least 2 years.
Well, yeah, the Comedy Store. The Comedy Store.
At the Comedy Store.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be currently working there.
But this is the Motion Picture and Television Fund.
So the Comedians Assistance Fund is a designated fund by the Comedy Store for comedians. But the Motion Picture and Television Fund has traditionally served people in the motion picture and television industry. So all of our, you know...
Is that SAG members?
It's not just SAG. It's union and non-union. We have a lot of freelance people, non-affiliated people. So it's WGA, DGA, the IATSE, SAG, AFTRA.
But it's unionized folks.
If you're not in the union,
how would they pay for the services? I guess the better question.
There is no charge for services.
If somebody needed 6 weeks of inpatient treatment, how would that get done?
Well, if they don't have insurance,
they're not union.
Right. If they don't have insurance and they don't have, we would be referring them out.
To
any, like a place like Tarzana Treatment Center or Cry Help or,
would
you know,
you
a place that had Medi-Cal
county, county funded, but would you be getting them Medi-Cal, helping them get it?
Yes, we would.
Okay, so that's how we do it. You help them get Medi-Cal.
We're social workers, you know.
Yeah.
For all.
Yeah. Right. So. Well, you understand that there's a lot of people flapping in the breeze out there.
For sure.
Which is crazy.
Sure,
especially now, I can't tell you how many times I've made people sit at the computer and buy health insurance that they can easily afford.
And we actually have a brilliant insurance broker. We actually have a division called MPTF Insurance Services, and she enrolls people. She's enrolling people right now for the ACA. She's still, I think today was the last day for Medicare open enrollment.
This is it.
Actually, I think for California, it's January 15th, yes. So anybody that needs insurance can call us.
A lot of online buzz about December 15th, so we got to push it back for California. Then.
Yes.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes, but we actually have a hotline for her, and anybody that needs insurance can call her as well.
So we have this recent case where they're questioning whether or not they're going to continue the ACA. Well, mm-hmm. How is that going to affect California, do you think?
Well, you know, California is as one of the more progressive states, I think there is commitment to continue the ACA in some form. I don't know what form it will take, but yes, I think.
I have a feeling we may have a kind of a Kaiser-like system at some point in California. Be interesting.
Yeah.
Anything particular issue you're interested in your work?
I mean, just from... You know, the clients and comedians I've worked with so far, I'm just noticing how resilient they all are and how motivated they all are. And as you said, there's still a lot of people flapping in the breeze out there, and they've made it this far. And I'm just happy that there's finally a support system for them to access.
Yeah, I don't think they know about it. That's why we're here.
Fascinated
to talk to you guys. That's why we're all trying to raise money tonight for this, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so this will help fund whatever services are necessary for those that maybe don't have the union whatever.
Yes. So we're doing direct financial assistance around basic living expenses and getting people on insurance, medical care, things like that. And it's also helping to cover the cost of Alicia's salary so that she can continue.
How is it funded presently?
The Comedy Store has given us
just
funding.
As a fund. They have set aside like a special fund.
Correct.
And, and then they're trying to do fundraising on top of that, I imagine.
Correct.
Which is doing tonight. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, excellent. Very cool. I mean, it's a big deal. It's challenging work, I'm sure. Is there any limitation on how much services you can render given a given patient?
I mean, it does depend based off of how much the client is making, whether they're employable or not. There is a lifetime maximum. But it varies from case to case. And we are not only providing financial assistance, but we're providing case management. I mean, many cases don't involve financial assistance at all. It's mostly just helping people access benefits that they're already entitled to.
Oh, interesting.
Or just educating them.
And so you're not rendering individual psychotherapy necessarily?
No.
It's more medical social worker stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're referring to the particular programs you refer to?
In regard to?
Mental health, substance.
I mean, we have a lot of clients out of state as well, so I'll just do my best to find out what resources are around them. Yeah.
Yeah, they're, you know, a lot of comedians are they're on the road so much that sometimes it's hard to, you know, if they're calling us in 3 weeks out of the month, they're, you know, on a cruise ship or on the road, you know, you have to kind of get them services where they are sometimes in the moment. So
that usually doesn't work very well, having treated many, many, many of them.
Yes.
So that's challenging. Do you have any other challenges other than getting them to focus on their recovery?
Yeah, I mean, there's always challenges. There's challenges getting past the comedy aspect of it. A lot of people want to, you know, spitfire jokes right away and kind of getting people to focus on, you know, addressing issues or getting down to business can be troublesome sometimes. But as I said, I think it's that resilience and the motivational aspect of it.
We would really like to have more clients. We're hoping
I hope that you will, because there's
this
certainly
podcast
need.
And this festival will generate, you know, some awareness and some outreach. I think one of the bigger challenges that we've had is just I don't know if, you know, obviously there's always stigma around accessing social services and mental health. And, you know, I don't know if that in this particular case is a barrier or it's just an awareness issue.
It's awareness because I wasn't aware of it. I deal with tons of comedians. So this is number one. Number two, it's denial and wanting to continue using or whatever it might be. And, you know, they're still, as long as they still are able to maintain their career objectives, they're fine. No matter how much misery there is in their life. So.
Yeah.
Getting through that denial is difficult sometimes.
Yeah, most of our clients have come in through word-of-mouth referrals or even things like Facebook, but I think this is the first time it's really being publicized, so I hope it...
I'm a little confused about the diagnostic situation because so many of them have substance and bipolar disorder and trauma. Are you referring specifically for those things, or how's that work?
I think when people are coming to us, we're really looking at, you know, one of the sort of principles of social work is start where the client is. Mm-hmm. So if they're coming to us and they're at risk for being evicted, or, you know, they're coming to us and they're living in their car.
So that's why they're coming. They're coming out of financial distress.
Yes.
So they come to me when they're mentally ill, not coming to you guys. Well, I'll be sending them to you. Trust me. You'll
great.
Be hearing from me.
Great. So. Yeah. So we're not... The primary focus isn't the clinical. Mm. It's really meeting the basic needs. That's what they're presenting with, the presenting problem. Mm. So underneath the presenting problem is then when we're getting into some of these other issues.
Oh, interesting. So it's just getting them in a living situation.
Correct, yeah. We're working on just sort of your basic stability first and then kind of getting through these other things. And I think the majority of our clients have been a little on the older side as well.
Yeah.
And they're like 50s and up, so.
Yeah, kind of like before Social Security age, but just past working age, kind of in between there.
Mm. Well, look out for the big three, because believe me, there's lots of that there.
Sure.
So, trauma, bipolar, and substance. That's, you know, it's a very common thing. And in a way, you know, comedy and audiences are a bid to solve that problem. Except, guess what?
Well,
they don't solve it. So, okay, well, good luck. Is anything else you want people to know about the organization or about where they should send resources if they want to help out?
Call
us. Where's the number?
The number is 818-861-3939.
861-3939, 818. Okay, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Well, if you're dealing with addiction, finding treatment is difficult. It's hard to navigate what's out there. The truth is, every patient's needs are different and constantly evolving. I've had the pleasure of vetting True Recovery in Orange County. They realized, of course, that effective care can't be one size fits all because they're reputable and they care about their patients. So, of course, they're going to be highly individualized. They have developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all the facets of drug and alcohol addiction. And True Recovery's master-level clinicians maintain small caseloads, allowing them to truly personalize their care and get involved on a connected level, which is what the key to recovery is. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient. And again, always with the holistic approach and focus on accountability. As patients become ready, True Recovery offers assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, as well as community reintegration support. We hear this all the time where people get recovery but then don't know how to live. They don't know how to get out into the world. Well, True Recovery helps with that. I've spoken with True Recovery's medical director and was impressed with their range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. This experienced team is well equipped to manage patients at all levels. To request information on how True Recovery can provide you with your personalized care or for that of one of your family members, go to drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. That is drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. Well, it's hard to believe a year has passed since one of the worst cold and flu seasons on record, but here we are again. So if you happen to catch a bug, the one thing every doctor will tell you is stay hydrated. Proper hydration eases a lot of the symptoms of many of these viral illnesses, and sports drinks, water alone, is not the issue. You need to be aggressive. You need something like Hydrolyte, full fluid replacement. Hydrolyte is this oral rehydration product you've heard me talking about. It's better than anything out there. It delivers the right balance of sodium, glucose, and water, providing up to four times the electrolytes sports drinks can offer, all with 75% less sugar. So think about that. It's like taking an IV by mouth. But my favorite thing is that the convenience. I'm always on the run, so I use the effervescent tablets. You just drop them in a water bottle or even a glass of water. I literally never leave home without them. No one in my family does, for that matter. And because Hydrolyte is appropriate for all ages, it's perfect for the little snowman amongst you when they come home from the school, perhaps sniffling. Hydrolyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or, like I said, those fizzy tablets. I love those. They go everywhere. Come in a little tube. Every package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order your supply today at hydrolyte.com/drdrew. For a limited time, you can save 30%. We use the code at checkout, drdrew18. That's Dr. Drew 18. So either click through on our banner at drdrew.com or go to hydrolyte.com/drdrew and then use that code, drdrew18.
Our guest is Tom Segura. So you're good. Can you talk about the new endeavor?
Yeah.
Go, tell.
We're just expanding. We're expanding our podcast channel.
Your mom's house is going to be an empire.
Yeah. We're going to do empire. We're going to try to do content like almost every day.
It's your mom's empire.
And one of our favorite things ever, and the audience's favorite thing ever, has been you basically, we always react to videos.
Yes.
And you react to us reacting to videos. And you basically point out that we are not completely healthy.
That's a kind way of saying it.
Yeah.
I love you both, but I get very, very worried when I sit there listening to you guys and watching you guys.
We have some new stuff that's really going to freak you out. Bad.
Is it possible I could be more freaked out?
I think so.
It's rare that I get approached by people these days that somebody doesn't go, I love you on your mom's house.
It's awesome, man.
Which is crazy.
Well, this is like the idea became like that you were such a hit with the audience that this is in a way, like it's your own thing, but it'll have a little bit of a companion aspect to it.
So let's be clearer. So yeah. I'm going to come on your empire. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start doing follow-on pieces, let's say.
Yeah.
Follow-on pieces to the stuff we do at your mom's house.
That's right. But you'll also be, like, hopefully talking to some comics.
Yes.
People basically, you know, we've discovered whenever they meet you in person or they reach out to us about you, they're like, dude, like, Dr. Drew really has it together. I'm like, you mean a doctor has it together? Yeah, he does. And we love that aspect of it, that we have access to somebody who's educated and articulate.
Yet
and,
your wife, if people don't know, Christina P. is Tom's wife, is constantly, like, literally 7 minutes doesn't go by before she goes, you're coming to the dark side. You're coming to the dark side. You're coming with us, the dark side.
She loves it.
I don't know what she's talking about yet, but it scares me every time she says that.
Dude, it's going to be so fun. We're so excited for it, you know?
I'm excited for you guys. I'm excited for me.
We have a new space. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Have we decided we're going to call my piece?
I think we all liked some aspect of like what would Dr. Drew do?
Something like that. Yeah. Or I thought, what the fuck with Dr. Drew? Or
hey, you're going to curse on
or
here?
Or what the hell with Dr. Drew would be good?
Yeah.
I think what the hell. That's
like
to me. I like what the hell.
Okay.
Because that, what the hell is what's in my head all the time while I'm watching you guys.
Doesn't Marin have what the copy written or something?
Maybe. We can ask him tonight. He's going to be here.
Just ran into him.
Oh, it's so funny. But yeah, what? Would you call it the dark side?
Dude, what about the dark side with Dr. Drew?
I'm in.
Dude, I like that a lot more, actually.
Or Visit the Dark Side, or On the Dark Side, or yeah, just The Dark Side.
The Dark Side with Dr. Drew? People are going to be like, what the fuck happened to that guy? And be like, you know how he used to keep people off drugs? Not anymore.
Not since he met Tom Segura and Christina P. It all went down.
He is a satanic worshiping cokehead now. It's
so
great.
Exactly what is it? Just give me a hint of what I'm up for the next series
the
of
next
videos.
The next time you come in, we just have, well, we have somebody who, we don't know if there's a psychotic episode, but they're definitely, we're towing the line of stalking. And then we have,
Every time I go,
we got a guy that likes to visit pain clinics a lot.
Oh, dude! I see dead people every time I go, and I see, and,
yes, this guy jumping out of a building, but he lands on a trash can.
Oh my god!
And I don't think he's dead. I don't think he's dead.
But I also see surgery when these things happen.
That guy
that dropped off that car truck, I just thought, okay,
yeah,
open repairs.
There's a few guys that are definitely now having like assisted living situations, but they're still really funny videos. Yeah.
Okay, now that right there summarizes the whole thing with you, which is these people. Lauren Savant just walked in, my co-host from KBC. Tom Segura just said, say it again. There are people who ended up in assisted livings,
but there's still really funny videos.
It's hilarious.
Yes.
And I just sit there with my, just like feeling so uncomfortable for the people we're watching and for Tom and Christina.
The best thing is that we had a guest in recently who, as I was watching him watch videos, I go, he's doing the Dr. Drew face. And she was like, what's the Dr. Drew face? I go, look, like he looked at the video and he went like,
and
like
then put
that.
Your hand over your face.
Like,
it's like
cringed,
I can't believe it.
You could hear his, his spleen
his
splitting.
Cringe, God. Oh my God, you're so bad. It has to be called the Dark Side.
The Dark Side.
Yeah, I think
because
that's where you take me every time.
Yeah.
Even now, matter of fact.
And I'd love for, because, I feel like especially everybody in the world has a little bit of darkness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes it's a big part of who they are.
If they're comedians.
Sometimes it's hit. And I love you talking to comics about their dark side.
Yeah, because it's pretty expansive.
Yes. So. Some people really lean into their dark side. Some people keep it at bay.
You and Christina lean in.
We lean into it, I think.
For laughs. Just for laughs.
But like being aware that we're leaning into it. Some people are not even aware that, They're not
really. They're in and they're not even aware. Very sad.
Yeah, yeah.
So just
we'll keep the really bad ones out of the studio, though. Oh, I think I got to go.
You got to do a show. Yeah. And thank you for stopping by.
Of course.
Good to see you, man.
I'm so excited.
I'm gonna come up and talk about the charity and stuff on stage after you. So.
Sounds good.
Well done.
All right.
See you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Get Lauren in here. Lauren, come in here. Lauren Savant. Lauren. Come on, just say hi. I know, but it. That's for you and me. It's boring, but for people that might be listening to this podcast, they don't necessarily. Okay, hopefully somebody's texting me. Hold on. Jeff Ross is coming up.
Oh,
so
nice.
You may get
Jeff
kicked
Ross
out for that.
Yeah. Met him so many times, but he's always so stoned. I don't think he ever remembers.
I don't think
it's always
be
a
any
new experience.
Yeah. So who are you?
Yeah.
So who are we excited to see tonight?
Oh God, I don't even know who to start with.
Where's your friend Spade? Where's he? He's supposed to come up here and talk to me.
He said he's not coming on till 9. So is he coming?
He'll be
early?
Here at 5 minutes to 9.
Yeah, typically. But we were just watching Bumpin' Mics on Netflix
with
Jeff Ross and Dave Attell.
Yeah, and they're both here.
Yeah, it's great. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear both of them.
Yeah.
They're really funny. And
Andrew, my wife Susan. Andrew, did you get your inhaler today? For that matter. Oh, dude. If he didn't, I'm going to be like, what?
It's a struggle. Who were you speaking to before Tom?
Talked to Brody Stevens, and then talked to a guy that was a piano player for the Comedy Store for years. A very interesting history.
Oh, really? They have their own comedy piano player?
That's what I said. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about that.
Wow.
Nikki's hopefully coming up in a minute, and then
awesome.
We'll kind of go watch after that. So
I feel like this is your Christmas party because these are all your friends.
These are all my friends,
right?
And the only time I get to talk to anybody is when I do podcasts publicly, and they come up and talk to me. And otherwise, they never visit me.
Except me.
You come, every day,
Monday
every day, Laura
Friday.
And I.
There
see,
I
look
at
where our news talk evolved, 790 KBC.
That's right.
Laura and I there every day, so let's go enjoy the comedy.
I can't wait.
Good to see you.
Let's do it.
Okay. The great Jeff Ross. Come on here, buddy. Get in here. So, how you been?
I'm good, man.
You look great. You look so happy.
I really am having a good night. My family's here with me.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
My nephew, Jared, and his girlfriend.
Hi, Jared. Where you guys live? Seattle. Like, you're not from Seattle, are you?
He's a fresh. I'm from New Jersey, but half my family somehow wound up there.
Oh, that's so crazy.
He's here with his girlfriend. They're on a Christmas break from college. Freshman in college.
Where are you in college? Oh, go Ducks.
Is that what it is? Ducks?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
It used to be. Now it's quite a dynasty. It's good. It's fine. University of Oregon's fine. Great school.
Well, hopefully.
You've probably spoken there a couple times.
Not yet. He's a freshman.
No, you may have spoken there a couple times.
I would remember if the team was called the Ducks.
Really?
I did not
know.
Well,
the other Oregon team is called the Beavers. So that's probably the one you would have remembered more, I think.
That's where his girlfriend goes.
Is it Oregon State?
Oh, dude. Josie, which school do you go to? Yeah.
Oh. University of Portland is a little different.
All right.
So
great to see you,
you
man.
As well. Your new Netflix special is killing it, right?
Yeah, it's doing real well.
And Tell's here tonight, too.
He's coming by. He'll make a rare indoor appearance. He does not come indoors.
Do you meet my radio partner, Lawrence Vaughn? We do a radio show every day.
Of course. Hi, Lauren.
And my wife, Susan.
Hi, Susan. Great to see you.
Jeff.
You guys look fantastic. Happy belated birthday. I'm sorry I wasn't there for the big birthday.
That would have been fun.
I was on the road.
You know what happened is you said something about doing a roast, and Mrs. Pinsky decided that's what we're going to do for your birthday because Jeff is going to host it.
I'm sorry, Susan.
It worked out fine.
It still sounded like it went great. Everybody I talked to said they had a blast.
We had a nice time, yeah.
Yeah, many funny people said that they had a great time at your party.
It's the only time I get to
and
talk
it's good.
To
you're
people.
You're celebrating your life, 60 years old. You look fantastic.
Crazy, right?
Whereas me, I'm aging at rapid speed.
No, you're not. You're doing fine.
I'm out of breath walking up the stairs to do your fucking podcast. I'm kidding. It was the only exercise I got today, Doc.
And you're short of breath.
People need to know what a good guy Dr. Drew is. And if you have any doubts, he's the best.
Where do you live now?
I live in Studio City Hills.
You're on the road all the time, right?
Not as much as I was. I also have a place in New York, so it seems like I'm away a lot.
Yeah.
I find when I'm bi-coastal, people are happier to see me.
Yeah. where can you talk about where you are in New York? Or do you not
Greenwich
talk
Village.
Oh, my God, how nice.
I have to live near the comedy clubs.
Oh, no kidding.
It's the best.
Jeez, speaking of comedy clubs, did you see Artie's been posting a lot lately?
It is sort of alarming, but also reassuring that he's doing okay and telling the world that he's doing okay, as opposed to some people who are telling the world that they're not okay.
Yeah. Did you see Pete Davidson's thing?
I did.
And I predicted that. I really saw him as a high suicide risk, so I hope they're taking that very seriously.
Is that normal for people to reach out in such an obvious way, in such a...
It's an aggressive act. If you really look at what he said, you know, be careful because don't forget I told you so.
Yeah.
You know, if you mistreat me and I'm really fragile and, you know, if you keep coming after me, it's on you, which is true. He's not wrong. And people are being... You know, poor thing of that kid's... How tough that is. He lost his dad, already depressed. I don't know if he has a substance problem or not, or maybe did have a substance use disorder, and then loses the love of his life, and then people are attacking him online. It's like out of control.
And then she lost the love of her life, so the whole thing...
It's a big circle, right?
It's a big circle.
It's a big clusterfuck is what it is. And
I don't know. This is something... When I feel the blues, for me, it comes and goes. I don't know if that's normal.
That's normal. You don't get depression is a different thing.
And I can actually say that I can pull myself up out of a chair. I can recognize it, and I'll catch myself. Maybe it's a sign of it. I don't know.
You've over the years, you've talked about stuff, not depression, but sort of because you're a sensitive person. I remember when you came back from, was it Afghanistan or Iraq or something? You were deeply affected for a long time after that, but not depressed.
Buddy Hackett used to say, comedians feel pain more than most people because that's our trade.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Right? I do feel that way.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be, we're in tough times. You have to toughen up. People are really sensitive, and I include myself, but I don't know.
Do you have trouble doing comedy because of the way people are? The outrage culture we live in?
That's a good question, Doc. I'll tell you, I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
I think it's the opposite. I feel more compelled.
Good.
To do comedy.
Good.
Because people are sensitive. You know, you're a doctor. You'll understand this. Let's just say laughter is medicine, right?
Yeah.
You've heard that before. Yeah. Nobody wants their medicine watered down, less potent. You want your medicine potent, hard, the full dose.
Well, yeah, let's do it.
So that's why I think
most of the practitioners are backing off. So good for you, man.
That's why I think, you know, comedy clubs and podcasts and other temples of free speech are thriving.
Yeah. They're calling it the intellectual dark web sometimes.
But it's right out there.
Yeah, it's good. So
all right. I love that we're at a comedy show.
I know. We're at a comedy show. We're public here. A lot of people standing watching this conversation. What's that? Oh, that's the comedy show. There's a second stage here that's up on the platform with us. It's up here on, just outside. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So don't worry. All right, so listen, let's wrap this thing up.
That's what I love about comedy, because when you're on your road by yourself, it can be very lonely. But when you're at these festivals, there's festivals, comedy festivals all over the world. I try to go to all of them. You get to see the other comics. Well, you get to see Dr. Drew.
Well, but everyone kind of knows each other, right? It's kind of a weird thing.
I feel like it's a cult. I feel like I'm a comedian before I'm an American, before I'm a Jew, before I'm any group that you think I'm part of. I'm a comedian first. If a comedian needs help, like we're not.
Well, that's what we're here. We're supporting this comedian fund now that supports these group of social workers that help comedians. I always wonder why musicians always had musicians assistance program. Comedians never had anything. And this is it.
I think we used to be in a more cutthroat environment. Comedians, we all used to be competing for the few slots on Johnny Carson, the few slots on primetime. This is all before my time, really.
Do you watch I'm Dying Up Here, which is really about that?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Do you watch it?
I watched it, yeah. But I feel like now there's more of a community for comics, whether it's because of Roast Battle or the way the comedians are, and the podcasts are more of a conversation as opposed to a solo performance often. And I think it's a good time, you know, for comics in that
respect. I'm glad to hear you're bringing the full dose. The other thing you did not that long ago was that thing in the prison.
Yeah.
Please do that again.
Man.
That was awesome.
I've never been more scared in my entire life.
I could tell.
Thank you.
And I was scared for you when you started giving the Nazi dudes grief. I was like, oh, shit. Those guys in the balcony with the swastikas on their face.
I had to go for them first to show everybody else that I mean business.
Oh, my God. I thought they were going to go for you first. But they laughed.
Yeah.
It was a
humanizing moment.
It was. But it was high stakes. I worried about you.
Can I come back sometime and talk to you about just more real life stuff when I'm not about to perform?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I love talking to you. I don't get to talk to you enough.
We'll do it anytime.
You're the best, Doc.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for everything you do and being Dr. Drew. Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Lauren.
Great Jeff Ross. The great Mark Maron sitting down at the mic here. I saw you tweeting to Kanye today. I was trying to outcompete you encourage him to come talk to me.
Are we going live?
Yes, we're live.
Are we really? No, we're not.
Yeah, we're live. We're not live, but we're recording now.
We're recording live.
Yeah.
But we're not going live.
No, we're not broadcasting.
It is so loud in my head right now, I can't even begin to tell you. And I'm a guy who likes to hear myself. That's good. That's good. Oh, so we're coming out on the mic, too. Oh, this is an audience situation. I understand. I understand.
Literally just saying hi to people.
This is it.
This is it.
Oh, see, yeah, Kanye, I didn't even know what happened until my producer in Brooklyn said, maybe you should get on and get in, respond to it.
I'm like, Rogan was going after it. I was going after it.
Everybody did. Like, everybody did.
He basically tweeted that he thought it was time to sit down and talk about mental health. We're all like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready. Come over. Come, yeah, let's try it. Please. I don't even know what will happen, but come over, you weirdo. There's no way this is going to go well, but please come over. Please.
No, it would go well, I bet you, if you could corral him.
I don't think you could. It depends on what level of mania he's at, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I don't know. Like it was the one thing I hated about being part of the dog pile is that everyone else's people start dogpiling on you. Right. You're like, no, I don't think so, Maron.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Joe's going to get him.
Like, yeah, he'd be better on Rogan.
I've avoided the Roganites forever, and people then just the door opened.
Maybe don't know. Mark is from a medical family. His dad was a doctor, and so he understands.
I understand how horrible doctors can be, how insanely self-involved and narcissistic the medical practice makes people.
Oh, man, my wife.
Yes,
Look at her applauding it. She's like, hey,
it's incredible how selfish and self-important a doctor can be, even an orthopedic surgeon in New Mexico.
It's true.
Yeah, I know.
Because you start to think what you're doing is like...
You're saving lives. You're saving bones.
You get a little culty a little bit. I was thinking about this because we start to...
Well, you are a cult.
It is. It is a bit of a cult.
My dad's he was a surgeon in New Mexico. He did knees and legs and ankles
He's
and
still
hips.
Part of the cult.
I guess so. Oh, the medical cult.
Yeah.
But you're an actual real cult.
Oh, I'm a cult personally?
Yes, you've developed a cult over the years. Through much hard work, intentional cult building on your part, Drew.
It was really my intention. I wanted to have lunch with you, though, and I'm going to ask you again now. Can we have lunch?
Okay.
Really? Because I'm putting you on the spot.
Where are we going?
I don't know. Somewhere on...
You know where we can go? We can go to... Where have I been eating lately? Over in Highland Park, there's a new little Chinese place called Joy.
Done.
Or Cacao. We can go to Cacao Mexicatessen.
Done. Highland Park is where all the hipsters go.
That's why I left. Used to I had to leave. Yeah,
it was hipster getting, heaven.
Well, I feel like I opened some gate.
And
then
gate?
I want to leave through it.
All the hipsters flowed in.
Yeah.
It was, I was waiting to be on your podcast, and I was down at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
And there was a place I think I saw on your television show, Milk or something it's called.
Oh, it's yeah.
And I was having coffee there.
No, oh, Cafe de Leche.
Cafe de Leche.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, my God, this is Highland Park? Where's all the... There's different... There was brown people when I was last in Highland Park.
Yeah, I know. Really I know. It, you know, and you start to feel that tension. Like when I moved there, I had no intention of... I didn't think it was hip or anything. I just I never bought a house before, and I saw a house.
They're nice houses. Yeah,
it was a cute little house. I was showing some other guy the neighborhood. We were just driving around. He was looking for a rental.
Yeah,
and I'm like, this looks good. And there was nothing there, man. There was nothing there. The York was the only bar that was there.
Yeah,
and then I just saw it happen. I saw it all happen, and you start to feel there's a tension that comes with gentrification. Eventually.
No, I know you feel guilty.
You feel something.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, I don't feel responsible, but I don't know.
So would you join the Armenians in Glendale? Perfect.
Yeah. It's nice to see
Lost Tribe of Israel.
Judgmental old people looking at you on corners and in front of supermarkets.
All right, man, I'll let you go. I just wanted to say hi. I didn't want to get a commitment for lunch, so I'll call you.
No, okay. Absolutely. Let's have lunch. Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Yeah.
Great, Mark Maron. Next up, keep rolling. The great David Spade. Come here, buddy. Grab these. How was your set?
It was pretty good.
Was it? Good. Great audience. You all right?
I just got finished.
Last time, literally, you and I really talked was after you got attacked by your friend. I know. It was a long time ago.
There's a lot of times when, you know, you got Dr. Drew and the Rolodex, you want to give him a call.
Well, literally, we were somewhere so like backstage at like a K-Rock.
I remember one time on an elevator, I was asking you something, too. I was like, which you get all the time when you're a doctor. It's like, hey, real quick. we've got three floors. Can you answer this question about my life?
Yeah, I want to vomit right now.
Yeah. I have this psychological problem. How would you fix it by the time we get to the lobby? So, but you get that a lot. But yeah, that thing with the guy attacked me was weird. And I did move out of that house.
That house?
The one, because I thought, I don't want to be a pussy. But, you know, there's a little blood on the walls or some on the carpet. And by the phone where I call 911, so I go... After I was definitely looking at the door at night, not being able to sleep well, I go, I got to get out of here. It's too many memories. But after that, it was all right.
You know, I think I also saw you on the set of Sandler's film about the Wexler, Sandy Wexler.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you know what was so awesome about that was you guys just hang out on his set. It's the most fun set I've ever been on.
I think I only did one day on it, but yeah, I would just go in just to see him because it was in L.A., yeah.
And everyone just would hang.
Yeah, it's good to just go sit in
Video
Village.
What a great group. And I'm forgetting the director's name, Steve...
Brill.
Brill, yeah.
And you just, when you do that, either try to think of jokes for the next scene or just throw in stuff just because it's fun, just because everyone's around.
It's just the most extraordinary thing to see.
Yeah, those are the least tense sets. I mean, we did the do-over, which is harder because it's a big budget. And it was just me and Adam. We did it in Puerto Rico and Savannah. It was tough, though. I mean, it's just me and Adam, that's tougher because I'm playing a character, so there was just acting tweaks where they say, it was Brill also, but he's
David,
like, don't be Spadey. Yeah, because I was supposed to be like straight up Jason Bateman, Ben Stiller, like everyman guy. And if I try to be, you try to spin a joke, because usually you're trying to milk everything out of everything.
Yeah.
But you weren't supposed to get the laughs. You're kicking them over to someone else. And it's
different.
Discipline. Yeah, it's different.
Brill, thankfully, is the nice guy in the world.
He's great, yeah. And he just did, I think he did his special, too.
Oh, that stand-up special was really good.
Yeah. I hear a lot of great things about that. And it's nice people, you know.
My son ended up working for
A
PA. What's the guy's, the producer? What's the guy's name? Grady.
Oh, Grady, yeah.
Working for Grady.
Grady, he's doing also our next one, too.
And, but by the way, when I came onto that set, I was just doing a little cameo thing, and both Grady and Spade are like, are you okay? You got everything? You want a sandwich?
Here's it's
like,
nice.
It's out of control. It's
it's nice, but they appreciate it, because that Sandy Wexler had about 50 cameos.
I know, but everyone had fun.
Yeah, so. I got a good Instagram picture of it. That was exciting. But tonight was good. We did this show. Lauren's here somewhere.
Is she making her way up here yet? Susan Pinsky?
Did you give her her directive?
She died. Give her a directive. Tell her David Spade's up. How'd you guys get to know each other?
Laura and I, oh, through Colin Quinn.
Right.
Colin is a great stand-up. And
speaking of Colin, last time I talked to him, it was about Artie.
Oh, Artie.
Oh, boy.
God, these Artie photos. Like, it's interesting that Artie is coming back and saying he's cleaner and doing well.
He just got busted for cocaine just today.
I mean, I saw that, and he said it was still in his system, but how long does it stay in your system?
Not more than 32 hours.
Oh. Well, maybe.
It's in his system.
Maybe.
It's in his system because he just used it.
I would plead gummer. Sometimes I used to rub it on my gums in the old days, and it was like the halfway way of doing it. But that's
I worry about him all the time. But he's on a replacement therapy, and I was on Suboxone, which is probably what he should be on. It's probably why he's doing better.
But is that the stuff that's like a jewel? Like it's halfway from doing heroin to not, so it still gives you a buzz?
But people like Artie have failed everything else. I'm not objecting to that.
You know, it's funny. I saw a big ad in the paper for Juul Smoke, you know, whatever it is for
the
kids.
The J-U-U-L?
Yeah, it's like, you know, hey, we have peach, tangerine. It's like pixie sticks. And they're like, but their pitch was instead of getting you on smoking with this, they go, this is what gets you off smoking.
Well,
it's
a step down.
I go, I know, but everyone's using it as a step up.
I know. If you're 15, it's a step.
But every ad is like, this is dangerous and addictive. I go, is this for Juul or against it? Because they have to do so many disclaimers that you go, I'm not sure which way this is going. But
and people use it for pot, too, a lot, for cannabis.
In those things?
Juul, yeah.
Because I know that when you go to like those weed stores, that...
I've not been to... I should go to one. I went to one.
It was pretty funny. I actually went and... Denver.
They call them weed tenders or bud tenders.
It's like basically a taco truck for weed. And you go in and they say, something worked. And,
I know, use that again.
They say, they have to card me. So these two, you know, stoners are there. The place is like 8 by 10 feet.
Oh, they're small.
And then I go, okay. And some are like huge with everything.
Why don't you go to
black light posters. Yeah. You know, they got, and it's like a little bit of a porn shop in the corner. They got a little bit of everything. A little bit of a... you know, yard sale. But I went in and I go, oh, I just want to get some, I got a bad neck, just anything that can make me sleep or something, or for inflammation. And they go, great. And then they both took pictures and they go, oh, we need to see your ID just for whatever.
Yeah.
And it expired a week before. They go,
they're calling you by your name, though.
So, yeah.
Hey, David Spade, hey. So,
photos, and then, oh, we can't let you in. Actually, you can't be in the building. I go, we're really going by the letter of the law. Do you think I'm not 14 or whatever it takes? So I had to wait out front like a jackass while my friend went in there and got, like, gummy bears of fentanyl or whatever. So it was all good.
I get that shit at the airport.
I was just saying that fentanyl is 100 times stronger than heroin. I'm like, since when was heroin for pussies? You know, like, oh, you still do heroin? No, just till my fentanyl guy gets here.
Car fentanyl is 100 times more potent than fentanyl.
What is?
Car fentanyl. And that's out there, too.
What is that, when you drink your gas tank?
No, it's just another version of fentanyl.
I mean, 100 times stronger. I'm like, how fucked up do we need to be, America? Like, I Christ.
I know.
I thought heroin was a big deal, but they're like, what a joke. That's like decaf.
Well, it looks like Lauren is not going to join us.
Yeah, quit on us. But,
I know, but I'll let you off the
there,
hook.
Is that her? No.
It's like Fitzsimmons the other end of the room, doesn't it?
Is that, no? That's closer to Lauren.
Yeah.
But thank you.
All right, man. It's great to see you. Thank you.
It's great to
here.
See you, and I know you guys do that show, which is great.
Yeah,
I hear
she's
nice
great.
Things about, so it's nice. And she's always a funny one to play off of.
She does her journalism thing with me. She's smart.
But that's
she's
the beauty of Lauren. She's funny,
she
pretty,
either.
And then she, if you need to ask a real question, she dives into it.
Well, also, she's got game in terms of interviewing other people. She will swing hard at the plate.
Oh, that's good because it can,
can
lighten up for you.
We had Mark Garagos on, and he was like, whoa, your partner. He started tweeting about
it. Right, because he thought it was going to be a skim job.
Exactly.
And then she dives in.
Punching him in the nose repeatedly.
I get it.
Sorry.
Yeah. And we'll talk. We'll come back. After the commercial, we're going to show photographs of Artie's nose and go over it.
Oh, you need to take a look at that. It's something else.
What exactly happened before
he dissolved the cartilage in his nose. It just dissolved, so it collapsed.
I heard that happened to Stevie Nicks, but she looks better than Artie.
Artie really did it fully. Like, usually you dissolve the septum. You can see in between. He dissolved the whole thing, so it collapsed.
That septum has left the building.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a catcher's mitt.
Do you have a relationship with Artie still?
Yeah. I mean, I still text here and there. We did a movie a long time ago, and
he's the greatest guy in the world,
and he's great. So,
but I mean, it's a sad thing. His latest thing is like, "Hey, I'm just a fuck up," and that's the way it goes. Like, I do not accept that.
I know, I but it's tough that. To have you around because you're, you can't bullshit you. It's easier with friends or people on Twitter, but if it's you, you're like, ah, oh, fuck, all right, I'm caught. This guy sees through me like, use Neutrogena.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
See you soon.
Great to see you.
Take care.
Bye, guys. Applause.
Here's James Spade.
Ow.
Thanks, bud.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.